Parshas Shelach talks about the Meraglim. Everyone here knows what the Meraglim are. The Meraglim were the spies that were sent into Israel to spy out the land. So the subject matter of today's, I just came from a graduation actually in Crown Heights Yeshiva, and the subject of today's shiur is the letter A. The letter A is the subject of today's shiur. Mechama, what do you think? I can tell you the honest truth. I don't talk about myself a lot. You know that, right? Only about my chocolate problem. But otherwise, I don't talk about myself a lot. But I'm a little bit of a Balgaiva, because I can tell you that from first grade till I graduated high school, every single report card, I always had at least one letter A. I'm not saying what the other letters were, B, whatever. I'm not saying, right? But D, delicious, you know, C, crazy, whatever. But I always had one. What subject do you think, from first grade until 12th grade, I had the letter A on my report card?
English.
What did you say, Jim?
Yes. Sports.
Sports. Thank you. Yeah, okay. Okay, we'll talk later. Yeah, okay. So I looked now, I couldn't get an A in any other subject. So what do you think, English?
Hebrew.
With the way I speak now?
Hebrew.
Wrong. Everybody's wrong. What? Mathematics. you know my mathematics? 1 + 1 = whatever you need it to equal. It's my mathematics. Right, 100%. Right. It could be 11, it could be two lanes on a highway, you know. Okay, whatever. Okay, the answer to the question is, because we have to get serious, I just want to start off because people are already here a long time, they're tired, and they're dozing off. So I always got the letter A on every single report card in the name Wallerstein. And that is the only letter A that I ever got on my report card. Okay.
Pretty sneaky.
Okay. Yes, Avivit, I know you also have the letter A on every report card. Okay. Anyway, so the letter A tonight stands for, in my lesson, the biggest word, the most important word to a teenager, an adult, and a child. Anyone here know what word starts with the letter A, which is the most important word in a person's life? And that's what my rose is all about tonight. Thank you, Jake. What?
Ahava.
Ahava. That's such a woman answer. Nice. Oh, it's very nice. It's an English word I'm looking for.
Appreciation.
Wrong. But appreciation is a very important word. The word we're talking about tonight, the whole share, is based on the word attitude. Oh, yeah. My kid has an attitude. My student, what an attitude. Whoa, I don't like her attitude. Or my parents, they have an attitude. So we're going to talk about attitude because that's probably the most important word. And that's what this whole parsha of the Meraglim is about. That's what my rose is about. That's what my whole shiur is about. So let's talk about attitude for a minute. So Parshas B'Shalach talks about Meraglim. So for all those who don't know, there were 12 spies. Moshe Rabbeinu went to God and he said, "You promised us Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Zavat Chavu Dvash. We want to send in 12 spies to check it out." Hashem said, "I told you I'm going to handle the situation. It's Eretz Zavat Chavu Dvash. I'm going to take care of things. Why do you need spies?" Moshe Rabbeinu said, "The Jews are a little bit nervous. You know, before you go into a new country, you send in the Mossad, right? And they check it out. And they tell you the strong points, the traps, you know, spies, the Navy SEALs. We know all about it, right? You send them in to check out the land." So Hashem said, "It's a lack of emunah. Because if I tell you to jump into the water, you don't got to check out the water, right? The Klai Yisrael didn't check out the water. They jumped into the water. So it's a lack of emunah." So the pasuk says, "Shlach lecha noshim." Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm not telling you, lecha, I don't agree with this, Hashem says. But for you, if you guys are nervous, shlach lecha noshim. So the question I always had, God, if you don't want him to do it, just tell him you don't want him to do it. In other words, if it's wrong for the Jews to go and spy because it shows that we don't believe in God, Hashem should have said, no spies. Moshe said, Hashem, I want to send spies. And Hashem should have said, no, no spies. But Hashem let them send the spies. Why? So growing up, I thought, you know, my father used to always say, Zechariah, I'm going to give you enough rope. You can either pull yourself up or you can hang yourself. In those days, that wasn't such a dangerous expression. Today, you can't tell that to somebody. But in those days, that was the expression. In other words, I'm giving you the rope. It's up to you what you do with the rope. So I always thought, that's what Hashem was saying. Listen, I'm telling you I don't want spy. You want to go? You want to do spy? Okay, you know, I'm not going to stop you. But after preparing this year for this week, Baruch Hashem, I think I have a totally different answer. And it's really brought down from an Avas Chaim. And it has a lot to do with attitude. So let me tell you what happened in this story. So these 10 Meraglim who were 10 to see him, big rabbis, big tzaddikim, rich, smart, the head of their tribes, not stam people. They were the Nesi'im. So 10 of them went in and came back and gave terrible information on Israel. Actually spoke Lashon Hara on Israel. Right? They said bad things. Two of them came back and said good things. Those two were who? Yehoshua ben Nun and Kaleb ben Yefunneh. What happened? Why did these two come back with good and these 10 came back with bad? And it's all based in the most important word, which is attitude. Let me explain to you what happened. If you look in the Torah, it says that they went in to Eretz Yisrael. What were they supposed to check out? Okay, they had a mission. Moshe Rabbeinu was the head of the Mossad. He gave him a mission. Re'isim es ha'aretz mahi. Mahu. Check out the land. Ve'sa'om, and check out the people, not just the land. Ha'yoshev aleh. Find out. Hechazok hu. Are they strong? Harofa, hama'adhu. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are they few? Are they numerous? Manashtana. What's Moshe Rabbeinu telling them? What's the difference if they're strong or they're weak? Hashem's going to handle the situation. Right? So it's very hard to understand. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving them instructions that might be leading them to their downfall. He's telling them, come back and tell us if they're strong or they're weak. 1 second, if they're strong, they're going to come back and say they're strong. The Jews are going to be scared. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu tell them that? Why would he give them a mission to come back and tell them if they're strong? If they're strong, well, we're going to panic. But that's the instructions that he gave them. Umah ha'aretz. And tell me about the land. Asher hu yoshev. Not just the people. Toivihi imra. Is it good or bad? Umah ha'arim. Tell me about the cities. Do they have a wall around them? That means they're weak. People who have a wall around the city is like to protect themselves. People who are strong are like, they don't have any walls. Like, you try to mess with us. We don't need any walls. So come back, tell me if they have big walls. Well, they have no walls. That was their mission. Okay. Umar, Tashmenihi, is it fat? Is the land fat? Is it skinny? Heishpoyates, Imayin, do they have trees? Okay. So, they come back. Now, it's very interesting. They give a report, right? And they say, Vayala Banega, they came to Hebron, and there they saw the four giants. Achimon, Sheshe, Talma, Yide Anok, right? The three giants. And they got very scared of them. And they came to Nachal Eshkol. And from there they took grapes, right? And they took figs and they took pomegranates. Says Rashi, that eight people had to carry the grapes. Eight people carried the grapes. Two, and two on a wooden pole with like U's on the ends, right? Two, eight, with the grapes in the middle. They were huge. Each grape was like the size of a watermelon. Wow. And the date, one guy had to carry a whole thing a day. And one pomegranate, it was crazy fruit. The fruit was humongous. I love that word, humongous. Crazy sized fruit, okay? And they brought this back. Now, why do we need to know that? And so that's 10 people. The other two, Kalev and Yehoshua, didn't carry anything. So what do we need to know about the fruit? Who cares about the fruit? You think when the Americans sent the Navy SEALs in to kill Osama bin Laden, they said, listen, when you go in there, check out the fruit that's growing, you know, in Afghanistan. Well, actually, it was in Pakistan. Who cares? Check out the fence. Check out the barbed wire. Check out how many men are there. Who cares if they're eating pizza or falafel or pizza? Right? Who cares? What does it make a difference?
The seals went out to kill the enemy, whereas the Israel wanted to know what this land that they were going to be living in was like.
Well, what is the difference when the whole reason that they sent the spies in was because they were scared to go in? What's the difference if a watermelon is small or big or... Okay, maybe. Could be. But as far as spying for fighting and war, fruit doesn't make a difference. But the fruit makes a very big difference. And I'll explain to you why the Torah spends so much time explaining us 8 people, 2 people, how big they were, why it's very important. And the answer is as follows. The rose. All right. L'chama. Now, calm down, everybody. I'm just asking her a question.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Could you tell... Here, take the rose. Could you tell everybody in the crowd, right, describe this to the crowd, what this is?
It's a soft-petaled, red, beautifully scented rose with leaves and thorns to protect the rose from groping hands. And
wow. No, you don't understand. You don't understand. I'm going to explain to you. Did I talk to you about this before the share?
No.
Did I tell you I'm bringing a rose in? Did I tell you you're going to have to describe it?
No.
The reason I gave you the rose is because you're a poet, and you know how to describe things. That's why I gave you the rose, okay? I don't want to get in trouble with Esty, my wife. to explain exactly why I gave on film, why I gave you the rose. You just said something amazing that I didn't know you were going to say. You just made my whole share. You made my whole share. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. So I have this girl in school. She is always happy. This kid, whatever I mean, she's just smiling. Hi, Rabbi, what's going on, Rabbi? And she's drug-free. We drug tested her. She's clean, right? So she's not happy because she's smoking. She's doing anything. She's clean. She's just a happy person. She's always, always happy. Always with a good word. It's nice to have people like that around, right? So I said to her, can you describe this to me like I did to you? So she held it and she said, it's red. By the way, I just read something in Kabbalah that there are 13 of these. If you count them, there are 13 that are to the 13 Yud Gimel Midos. Hashem, Hashem, Kerach, Machan, and Rechapan, Rechaz, the 13 Midos. If you look at a rose, you'll count 13. I didn't check it, but I don't know exactly which rose they're talking about, but I just haven't seen that in a Sifrei Kabbalah. But anyway, I don't want to get off the subject. So she said, like you said, she looked at it like this, and she said, it's red, it has a beautiful scent. She used the word velvety. It's velvety, and it's one of Hashem, this is what she said, it's one of Hashem's most beautiful things that he created. I was like, wow, that's amazing, right? And I got this other girl. I have never seen her smile. I do not know if she has teeth or she doesn't have teeth. I'm not sure, but definitely if her parents spent money on braces, they wasted a lot of money, because she don't smile. And I try all my rabbi jokes, and some of them are really not that bad. The one with last week with Sota, come on, major league. I should tell it to them? Major league, but you have to get it. Major league rabbi joke. So last week's Pasha talked about the Sota. So if you know what the Sota is, a woman, her husband tells her, I don't want you to go into that room, close the door with that man, because I don't trust the two of you. So he warns her. She goes into the room anyway. There are 2 witnesses. They saw the warning. The door gets closed. So now the man, she has to go to the Beis HaMikdash, right? Because the husband is very suspicious that something happened. And they take Hashem's name, and they erase Hashem's name, and they put it into water, and she drinks that water. And if she did something with that man, her stomach blows up internally, and she dies. If she did not do something with that man, then she has a child, you know, whatever, and even if she never had children. So that's called the Sota. So if she's warned not to go in the room, and she does, with a strange man, not her husband, that's called a sota. Okay, and that was last week's parasha. And I forgot what it says, but actually after that comes the nazir, and those were people who saw what happened to the sota, so they became a nazir because they wanted to separate themselves from anything like that. So I came into the office this week, and I said to Aviv, what happens? Oh, this is so stupid. Why am I saying this over here? Why are you making me do this? Why are you making me do this? So I asked Aviv, what happens if you have a bunch of women with a bunch of men that go into a room together and the door's closed? What is that called?
Orgy.
No, chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. We'll erase that from the tape. It's called, and she thought it was funny. I didn't, but I tried this joke on this kid. I didn't get her to smile with it. It's called club soda.
Ha 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 ha!
I told you it wasn't that good. Okay. Anyway, I mean, he thought it was funny. I actually didn't think it was that funny. But I used this joke in school with this girl, and she didn't even smile. I hope you don't translate everything that we're saying here. Hello? Hello? I hope you're not translating everything. Okay. Anyway, so this is one of those shiurim that's offline, right? Totally. So let me tell you what happened. So I went over to this girl, and she's wearing her hood, and she's in a bad mood, as always. And I said, could you do me a favor? I'm giving a shiur this week. Could you describe this to me? I said, could you put your hand out? Can I give it to you? Like, you know? So she puts her hand out. I give her the, oh, Red Wallstein, what's wrong with you? Oh, thorns, I'm bleeding. You hurt me. Why'd you do that? I'm like, it's a rose. I just want to, take it back. I don't want to talk. I don't want to describe it. So all she saw from this whole flower, Lachama, were the thorns. That's it. She didn't see what's going on up here. The beauty, the red, the velvet, the flower, the smell, all those good things you said, nothing. Thorns! You hurt me! That was her perception of the rose. Now, Nechama said something amazing. Nechama said, I never heard that. Nechama said, when she's describing it, she said, and it's velvety, and it's red, and it's soft, and it smells good, and it has thorns to protect the flower. The opposite of what this girl said. Oh, Lou, it's to hurt you, right? And if I asked most people in this room, and I said, why did Hashem put thorns in the rose? You would say, well, you know, beauty, you know, has to have some ugliness to it. Yeah. You know, most people you ask about why does the rose have thorns, they all say the same answer. No pain, no gain. That's the rose. But Nechama said, no, the thorns are to protect the rose from animals and hands that shouldn't be touching it. And therefore, animals and things don't eat roses because they're going to be swallowing thorns, and they eat weeds and other flowers, but they can't eat a rose because it's full of thorns. So the thorns actually protect the flower. Now, Nechama saw the same flower as that girl in my class, but she saw something very different. That's called attitude. Because this woman sitting here, and I'm not looking to make her an example, anything I would give her to describe to you, she would describe definitely the beauty first before the ugliness, that's for sure.
Thank you.
If she would describe the ugliness at all. Because Nechama has a very positive, good, upbeat attitude.
Thank you.
And that's... Well, the perception
I'm honored.
The perception comes after the attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
The attitude doesn't come after the perception. So if I have the right attitude and I look at the flower, my perception is that it's beautiful. If I have the wrong attitude and I look at the flower, my perception is that it's ugly. So first comes the attitude, then comes the perception in life altogether.
And she's
okay, she's good, she's good. Don't get emotional on me. I'm going to have to give you the rose in front of everyone. Don't get emotional. It's the chumbo. We're talking the truth. We're talking the truth. You're welcome. So this is the perfect example of, this is this week's parasha, girls. This is this week's parasha. What happened here? 12 people went into Eretz Yisrael. 12 people saw the same thing. Giants. Cities without walls. Crazy-sized fruit. 10 came back and said, we're finished. Giants, they're going to wipe us out. How are we going to fight them? Cities of strong people, how are we going to fight them? Do you know that there was a big miracle in Israel, that everybody was dying? That everybody was dying? And because everybody was dying at that point when they came to spy, everybody was by funerals, and because they were by funerals, these spies could walk around town and nobody asked why are there strangers, because everyone thought the strangers were invited to the funeral. So Hashem made a miracle that the guy, these people, the idol worshippers were dying so that the Jews could see Eretz Yisrael. He did amazing things at Kadosh Baruch Hu. But these 10 came back and learned, had the attitude of thorns. They said, giants, we can't go. Cities, we can't go. The fruit is huge. You know why the fruit is huge? Because if you look at the fruit and you see the size of the fruit, imagine what the people look like. Oh my God, let's get out of here. That's how they looked at the fruit. Kalev ben Yefune, Vayahas Kalev, the pasuk says, and Yeshua had the opposite attitude. They were like, this is amazing. God promised us that we're gonna succeed against giants and against huge, strong cities and major league food. And we're going to be able to capture this land. What a Kiddush Hashem. That's why Hashem allowed the spies to go. Because it could have been the biggest Kiddush Hashem. Go find out if there are big people and giants. If you come back and there are, wow. The Six-Day War was a miracle. You were all kids, or not even born at the Six-Day War. But I was. Okay, I was already a teenager. Oh, not really. I was 10 years old. Anyway, so I was 10 years old. Now, everybody was walking around, Hashem, Hashem. Nobody talked about the Israeli army. It was miracles. There were angels. There was a rabbi. The Arabs all ran. They saw a guy with a long beard. And all the Israeli soldiers were talking about unbelievable stories where they were surrounded and the Arabs' gun didn't work. Crazy Nisim. Why was the Six-Day War so famous? Because we were outnumbered 1,000,000 to 1. We were surrounded by Jordanians and Egyptians and Syrians. We had nowhere to go. They had the weapons. They had the Air Force. They had everything. We had nothing. And we won. If there would have been a bunch of guys with bows and arrows, right, and a couple of sticks, and we would have won, wouldn't have been any big miracle. So the Kiddush Hashem, the greatest Kiddush Hashem, was if the spies do go to Israel, and they do see the giants, and they do see the big food, and they come back and say, wow, giants, food, but we're not worried, we got God. Hashem said, that would be the biggest Kiddush Hashem. So he said, let them go. Let them go. They're going to come back with a big Kiddush Hashem. But their attitude, girls, their attitude affected their perception. What was their attitude? They knew there's a Yetzer Hara and a Yetzer Tov. They knew that when they get to Israel, their job as leaders of each tribe is over. In Israel, there's going to be a king. The Nesiim's job is over. So in their subconscious, they didn't want to lose their job. So on their way into Israel, they were already looking for things that are no good so that when they come back, the Jews won't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. So their attitude walking into Eretz Yisrael was already no good. So you could have shown them anything. Hashem showed them grapes this big. They should have said, we can't wait till we get here. Imagine one grape and I have 35 bottles of wine. This is great. But they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. So they saw big grapes as a problem. Giants as a problem. Strong cities as a problem. That was the Yetzer Hara. You want to know what the Yetzer Tov was? And I'm much more scared, girls, of the Yetzer Tov than the Yetzer Hara. I'm much more scared of him. The Yetzer Hara, when you do something wrong and your bad inclination tells you to do it, you feel bad afterwards. When your good inclination tells you to do it, then sometimes you feel good about doing a sin. So Chazal say that they said like this. We're in the Midbar. We're in the desert. The man, right? The spiritual bread. They didn't go to the bathroom for 40 years. Sounds like a problem, but they really didn't go to the bathroom for 40 years. Why not? Because the man had only Kedusha in it. The person goes to the bathroom because it separates the good and the bad, and the bad has to leave your body. In the man, there was no bad. So they didn't have any bathrooms. They didn't have to go to no Asher Yatzas the whole 40 years. They didn't have to go to the bathroom. They were holy. So their food was given to them. The water came from the Be'er Miriam. The clouds surrounded them. They could sit all day and learn Torah. There was no working. 40 years unemployment. Amazing. Huh? Good. What? Paradise. For some people. Right? So it was amazing. So they said, the Yetzer Tov, if we're going to come back from Israel and give a good report, then we're going to go into Israel. If we go into Israel, we lose the man, we lose the well of water, we lose Hashem's clouds, and what are we going to do? plant, build, grow things, harvest. What am I going to learn? What am I going to learn? I'm going to be working. No, 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 no. We don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. That was a Yetzer Tov. But it's not your Yetzer Tov, ladies. If Hashem tells you to do something, and you start figuring out why it's right to do it the other way, that's your Yetzer Hara disguised as your Yetzer Tov. Hashem said, I'm taking you to Eretz Yisrael. Don't start figuring, well, it's much better here because I got the money and I got everything I need. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a mitzvah of Maisa, a mitzvah of Truma, a mitzvah of Shemitah, a mitzvah when the Jews came in to break all the Avodah Zarah, to cut down the Asherah trees. There were many, many mitzvahs that were Tluya Ba'aretz that only had to do with Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem said, I'm God, I'm telling you, you got to leave the Mun behind, you got to leave the clouds behind, you got to leave the Be'er Miriam behind, and yes, you're going to have to go to work, and you have to build houses, and you're going to have to plant trees, and you're going to have to plant fields, and you're going to have to do all of this. But if I'm telling you to do that, don't start making your Yetzer Tov that, you know, I'm talking Lashon Hara on this girl when they ask me for a shidduch because I want to save her family. If you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara, you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara, period. Don't start giving yourself a reason why I need to talk Lashon Hara about this person. Or don't start giving me a reason why I'm allowed to steal from a non-Jew. You're not allowed to steal from anybody. Don't start, well, yeah, he would do it to me. And if they give you more change, yeah, maybe halachically, if you give $20 for something and they give you back $80, right? And they made a mistake because they thought you gave 100. Maybe halakhically you can walk away. Because, hey, if I owned the store and I gave him 80 bucks, this guy would never tell me. But lemaisa, if you give him back the 80 bucks, it's such a big kiddush Hashem. Because the guy knows you could have walked out. So you have to think about, when you make a decision, what does Hashem want me to do? So their attitude was wrong when they came in. And therefore, they saw a totally different story. I feel very, very much that a lot of the people that I work with, that I deal with, who have questions on Hashem and questions on the Torah and questions on Judaism, they see the same Torah I see. And they see the same Shabbos I see. And they see the same rose I see. So how come they don't feel like I feel about God? And the answer is, their attitude, before they see all these things, is for whatever reason it is, whether it's a Yetzer Hara or a Yetzer Tov, whatever the reason is, because this girl came to me, she said, I have 100 questions. Should I have 100 questions? I said, you have 100 answers. They're not questions. Those 100 questions are your answer to your misbehaving. You're sitting there and coming up with questions so that you don't have to feel guilty, because whatever you're doing with this boy, right, it bothers you, so you got to get rid of God. Because as long as God is around, you feel like you're doing the wrong thing. So you have questions, you don't have questions. Each one of those questions, you know the answer. She was in my office this week. I said, you know the answer. Her parents are like, our daughter is here, Rabbi Wallerstein, because we brought her here today because she has at least 100 questions. And she's sitting there like, yep, I got a lot of questions. And I'm like, you're not going to like what I'm about to say. You don't have any questions, little girl. You know every answer to every one of your questions. And her parents are like, no, no. I'm like, just let me finish. I said, if you would step out of the room, I could tell you in 2 minutes that she doesn't have any questions. You know why? Because she didn't even study the things she has questions on. So that's not a question. It's not a question. If somebody walks out in the street, one of you girls walk out of the street tonight, you come out of Arnava. Why is Pluto so far out in space? Why does the moon get bigger and smaller? The left ventricle valve in the heart, how come it works that way and it doesn't work a different way? We'll look at you. Are you out of your mind? Did you look at it? Did you study it? That's not a question. But stop ploppling. Walking out and just, okay, I got 100 questions, you know? Why does gasoline burn and vinegar doesn't? Why can't men have children? Because they don't want to. Those aren't questions, ladies. Those aren't questions. That's just throwing things out. Question is, you learned something, you understand it, and after you understand it, there's a part of it that's not fitting in to the understanding of what you studied, and you have a question on that. That's a question. But to come to a room and say, okay, who was before God? How many worlds were before God? What does God look like? Is he female or male? Right? Tell me about time. Tell me about space. Tell me about, right? Those aren't questions. That means that you got a problem right now. God is in your way. So your attitude, I don't have any answers for that attitude because you're a miracle. Whatever I'm going to answer you, whatever I'm going to tell you, you're going to tell me thorn, 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 ow, thorn. Every question you answer is going to be thorn. I'm showing you a rose. I'm showing you the beauty. You're telling me about the thorn. I'm showing you the beauty. You're telling me about the thorn. So I can't answer someone like that because you, all you're talking about is a thorn when that's the most unimportant part of the rose. Or according to Nechama, it's a very important part of the rose. So that's what I told this girl. I said, I'm really sorry. I am not going to sit here and answer every one of your questions. They're not questions. They're just answers to your behavior. It's, you're coming in with an attitude. My school, my high school, I don't take any girls into my high school unless they have the correct attitude. Because to change an attitude, it's a mochama. So if a girl wants to come to my high school and she says, Reb Wallstein, I'm ready to grow. Help me. I'll do anything for you. If a girl comes like, hey, Rabbi, so they say that you can talk anyone into Judaism in 10 minutes. Hey, you never met me. Okay, try. I might have a nice day. Because with that attitude, no matter what, if I bring Hashem down to the world to talk to her, she'll say, that's not Hashem. The Torah was never given. Moshe Rabbeinu never lived. So when you have that attitude, then you're a miracle. Then I can show you the biggest fruit, the biggest things, the biggest miracles. You just came out of Mitzrayim. What are you people talking about? You came out of Mitzrayim. Three giants? Three giants you're worried about? What about the whole army of the Mitzrayim, the most powerful army in the world? Hashem split the Yamsuf for you. The same people have a problem with three giants? No. They have a problem with them losing their jobs when they go into Israel. And therefore, that attitude had a lot to do with their perception. Why am I talking about this so much? Because, ladies, and anyone who's watching this year, your whole life, whether you're going to be successful in marriage, in bringing up children, in panasa, in inner happiness, your whole life is based on that word. It's based on your attitude. And if you have a negative attitude, you'll go to a wedding and you'll be miserable. You'll go to anything you go to, you're going to be miserable. And if you're a happy person, wherever you're going to go, I was trying to explain that to someone today. If you're a happy person and you have a good attitude, I could drop you in the worst place in the world and you're going to be happy and smiling. And if you're a miserable person, I'll make you the cow at the wedding. You're going to be the bride. You're going to be a miserable bride. Because you're a miserable person. Because you have a miserable attitude. So it could be the night of your wedding and you're miserable. And you could be a girl who's 48 years old and never married. And you're going to weddings for the last 20 years with all your friends and you're still dancing for the kala like you're 18 years old. Because that's who you are. Because you have the most amazing attitude. You're like, Hashem, I'm 48, I'm 38, I'm 28, whatever it is. When you're ready, I'm trying, I'm doing my best. But until then, you're God. And this 32, 35-year-old girl who's still single is dancing in front of the kala with the biggest smile, with her balloons and her tricks. I don't know what you call it, tricks, games, whatever you bring. Shtick, right? She's the one. I know someone like this. She's in her 40s. She's the one who comes to the wedding with bags of shtick. And the 22-year-old girl who went out with five guys and they said no, she's sitting there miserable at the same wedding. Miserable. With a chip on her shoulder. Why is she getting married? Not me. She's all of 21 years old. She went out with five guys. And the 36, 42-year-old girl, she brought the shtick. So what's going on here? What's going on? They're at the same wedding. They're at the same wedding with the same cow, with the same people. What's going on here? What's going on here is they have two totally different attitudes. One has an attitude of besimcha, of accepting, of understanding that Hashem does everything. So she's happy. When it rains, she's happy. When the sun's out, she's happy. When there's cloud, she's happy. Clouds are good. Rain's good. Sun's good. And she's not on drugs. Right? Everything's good. And then the other person, nothing's good. Sunny day, I forgot my sunglasses. Rainy day, I forgot my umbrella. It's too warm. It's too cold. It's too humid. It's too dry. Never happy. So how do you change your attitude? Ooh, good question. So very nice, Rabbi Wallstein. How do you change your attitude?
That's You have to ask Hashem for help.
I'm going to tell you. This week's parsha, it has it all. Not just questions, it has an answer. So, we want to know how to change this. So we have to look into this week's parsha and look at the two guys that ended up coming back with an amazing report, with we can do anything, and anything can happen. Very interesting what happened with these two. One of them was Hoshea ben Nun, and the other one was Kalev ben Yefuneh. So if you look, Vayikra Moshe li Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. He called him Yehoshua. And if you look into Rashi, Nispalel Olav, he davened for him, Yudkei Yoshiacha Me'atzos HaMeraglim, that he should be saved, his Rebbe davened for him, that he should be saved, and his attitude should be different than the attitude of the other spies. What about Kalev ben Yefuneh? Moshe Rabbeinu was not his Rebbe, and Moshe Rabbeinu did not give him that bracha. So the Torah tells us that they came to Chevron, and he went, Kalev ben Yefuneh went to the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, to the Oveis Avoseinu, and that's where he davened. Says Rashi, Vayavo od Chevron, at Chevron, Kalev levado halach sham, Kalev himself went to Chevron, v'nishtacht al kivrei Oveis, sh'lo yehi nisos l'chaberiv liyois ba'atzeisam. He went and he davened to the Oveis Avoseinu in Chevron that they should save him from being with the rest of Meraglim. V'cheinu oimeh, v'loi etten esaratza shedorach bo. And therefore, Kalev got as a reward, he got Chevron in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah in his Yerusha in Eretz Yisrael. So how did these two make it? One went to his Rebbe and got a bracha. One got a bracha from Moshe Rabbeinu Yehoshua, and the other one went to his Oveis Avoseinu. He went to his Yichus. He went to where he comes from. And he focused on where he comes from and his Yichus. And he tracked it back to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that's what gave him the strength to have the right attitude. Because if you look back at Avram, and you look at his chesed, and you look at Akedas Yitzchak, and you look at Yaakov and everything he went through, and Yaakov thought he lost Yosef, and Avram went through a very hard time, Yaakov went through a very hard time, Yitzchak thought he was being shechted, and they all made it, and they all were happy about their avodas Hashem, of serving Hashem. So Kalev went into this with the attitude that God can do anything. Big people, little people, better giants. Because if it's giants, it's a bigger miracle. It's a bigger Kiddush Hashem. And that's the way to change your attitude. The way to change your attitude is you have to, first of all, it's always good to get a bracha from your teacher, from your Rebbe, from your parents. And the second part of it is, if you want to change your attitude, look at the generations before us. Look at the Holocaust survivors. I mean, talk about attitude. They went through, 6 million Jews were killed, they lost everything. They come to America, and all they're thinking about is building, working, and building families and a nation, and all of us are here today as a product. They didn't give up. They didn't come to America and look at America and say, I'm a stranger, and I don't speak the language. Forget about it. They came to America and said, we just lost 6 million Jews, we need to build. I remember there was somebody that spoke and said that there was this guy, this man in Borough Park, who lost everybody in the Holocaust. And he used to go to this yeshiva and ask permission from the principal if he could go once a week to the kindergarten and just look at the little kinderlach faces. And that gave him the strength to go every week. He said, Hitler thought he was going to destroy us. These are his revenge. This is our revenge to Hitler, Yimach Shemo. He would go every week. And he would look at kindergarten, and he would look at these kids' faces. Ladies, how many of us go to kindergarten to look at little kids' faces, to give us a chizik and strength that we're here after everything? Look at these little faces, this innocence, who are learning the aleph phase. Yeah, if you start your day like that, you got the right attitude. If you stand by your door every morning and you thank Hashem that you can see and you can walk and you can talk and you can smell, and your hands are moving, and your feet are moving, and your brain is working, you can eat, you can digest, you can get rid of the stuff to digest, and everything is working, and you start your day like that at your door before you walk out, what an attitude! That everything you see is great! But if you walk out the door every morning, oh no, another day, I gotta go to work, I don't like the people, I'm not sociable, oh, it's cloudy, it's warm, it's cold, I don't know what it is, ugh. So everything you see that day, the most gorgeous rose, you'll walk by and say, that rose doesn't look good. They used to look better. Nothing will look good. So, yes, it's up to you to change your attitude. Nobody can change it for you. I cannot. I can get in, I can make stupid jokes, right, about club soda. It's not going to change your attitude. You may laugh for 2 seconds, but the person's attitude is who he is. You have to focus on positive. It's amazing what Nechama said tonight about the thorns. I didn't even think that. I'm not even there. Right? I'm like, okay, Hashem. You know, it talks about it in Shir HaShirim. It's beautiful, Shir HaShirim. You should read Shir HaShirim. You'd love it. In Shir HaShirim, so there's a medrash on Shir HaShirim that says, if you think this, if you listen to what I'm about to tell you and you focus on this once in a while, then your attitude will definitely change. So it says, Kasher Shana ben HaChochim, that the Jewish nation is like a rose amongst the thorns. Right? Not the thorns on the rose. So the medrash says on it that there was a story of a king. And he had a garden. And the garden wasn't taken care of. So he comes down to the garden with his workers. And it's all weeds and thorns and bramble. And you know, I knew that word. It's a little poetic. Bramble. Right? Ramble through the bramble. Okay, anyway. So there's all these weeds and thorns. And he says, okay, everybody, just light a match. Let's burn down the whole garden. Right? By the way, something I learned on Shavuos. So you have a castle, and you have thousands of trees in your way to get to the castle. And in the castle is, of course, the queen, the princess, and everybody wants to get the princess, the prize. So the king gives all these guys axes. And he says, the guy who gets to the princess first gets the princess. There's 1,000 trees between them and the princess. It ain't happening. It takes 2 days to knock down a tree. They're never going to get, by the time they get to her, she's going to be 95 years old, right? And then when they get there, they're like, I don't want to marry you, right? So, okay. So they're all standing there. One guy's like, okay, I'll try. He chops, his hand's hurting, his back's hurting. After a day, he says, this is a mishigas. What am I? It's never going to happen. There's one guy, this is the guy you want to marry, everybody here. One guy is walking around, he's like, the king never gives something impossible to do. Now, if he's saying the first guy to get to the queen, the princess gets the princess, there's got to be a trick. No one can chop down 1,000 trees. Nobody. Everybody leaves. They're like, ugh, it's just a joke, it's just a trick. Let her rot in the castle over there. We're not going to get to her. This guy thinking. He's like, this is easy. Takes out a pack of matches, lights it up, lights up the tree, sits back, has a soda, fire one tree to the next tree, to the next tree, to the next tree. Before you know it, all the trees are burnt down. It took him about 4 hours to get the whole fire, all the trees burnt down. And he's by the princess. Hey, princess, let your hair down. You know the story. Okay. Whatever. Right? Took him 4 hours. All the other Meshugam, they ran home. She says, I saw this on Shavuos, Neri Digavar. He says, Torah is compared to Esh, right? Ner, Neshama, compared to Esh. Why is Torah compared to Esh? He says, because if you're going to fight the Yetzirah, right? He's the Yetzirah. He tells you, do this wrong, do that wrong, do this wrong. Facebook! Okay, I wasn't going to say anything, right? You know, get on Facebook, get off Facebook. By the way, today, a big article. 100,000 people in England got off Facebook. I think 150,000 people in Canada got off Facebook. And there's a big movement to get off Facebook because it's destroying. They didn't even hear my share, right? And what? They didn't even hear my share. I have a printout of it. If you want to see it, I have a whole printout they sent me. Some nice person sent it to me. So there's already the word is out that it's not healthy and it's not good for you. But anyway, forget the Facebook story. So the Maisa, why is it called Aish? Because if you're going to try to fight the Yetzirah without the Torah, right? You're going to be chopping down one tree at a time. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But if you learn Torah, Torah is compared to fire. You send that fire after the Yetzirah, it's going to burn him down. So on Shavuos, I was learning this. It says, Torah keneged kulam. Torah is more powerful than all of them. Every mitzvah is powerful. Every mitzvah is an axe, right? Mitzvah tzitzis, knock down one tree. Mitzvah tznius, knock down another tree. But Torah is a fire. If you learn Torah, it's that guy that was standing. He's like, you guys all messed up. I just got to the princess in 4 hours by lighting a fire. So I want to end.
That's a man's attitude.
Huh?
That's a man's attitude.
That's a man's attitude?
Women are kind to my attitude.
We're not talking about attitude. Oh, we are talking about attitude.
Yeah.
So I am not going to say in a public forum, because last time I said it, somebody picked up a shoe and were about to throw it at me, but she didn't because she would have been embarrassed. And I said that tznius, right, is a woman's Torah. Ooh, did I get emails after that? Oh, my God, you're a chauvinist. You think we can't learn Torah. It's all about tznius and all you men and all you rabbis. It's all about what? We can't learn. We can also learn. It's not all about tznius. So I didn't say that tznius is your Torah. But it could be this. It's supposed to be. But anyway, you can learn. It's good for you to learn. You should learn, right? Keep you out of trouble. Do you have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah? No. It's a machlekes, but most of my neirim hold you, there's not a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But Talmud Torah, why do girls nevach, they sit today, they're taking finals, double finals, triple finals. My daughter has to know the Navi by heart, with the Rashi by heart, with everything by heart. She's walking around like a zombie, right? At 2 o'clock at night, she's saying psukim that I never even heard of, right? So why? Because the schools feel that if they learn a lot of Torah, it'll keep them out of trouble. Do you have a mitzvah of learning Torah? You don't have a mitzvah of learning Torah. Anyway, take care of your family. Make sure your kitchen's kosher. Make sure your Shabbos is good. That's your Torah.
You.
All right. I want to end with this thought. We'll let you go. So it says like this. It says that when they came back, everybody was calm. They told them about the giants. The Jews were like, we can handle them. They told them about the cities. The Jews were like, okay, we can handle that. They showed them the fruit. They're like, great. Apple pie is going to be huge, right? Fruits are huge, fine. All of a sudden, the Jews fell apart. They started crying. Hashem said, you're crying now? I'm going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash every Tisha B'Av. You're going to cry? Because on Tisha B'Av is when they came back and they started crying. What caused the Jews to all of a sudden crack up and start crying? So the Pasuk says the following. Before they started crying, the Pasuk says, so they came back and they gave their whole report. And nobody freaked out until they said the following. Until they said the following scary words. And they said like this. Misham Re'inu, last pasuk in Perek Yud Gimel. Misham Re'inu Sanafilim, we saw the giants. B'nei Anak, the sons of the giants. B'nei Anafilim. V'nihi be'eneinu kechagavim. We were in our own eyes like grasshoppers. V'chein hayinu be'eneihem. And we were in their eyes like grasshoppers. The minute they said that, next word, Vatisha kol ha'eda, Vayitnu es kolam. The whole Jewish nation started to scream and cry. That's it. They heard that. What do you mean? I told you about giants. No problem. I told you about armies. No problem. I told you about the fruit. No problem. People dying. No problem. All of a sudden you freak out because I told you that we look like grasshoppers. What happened? Very important point in psychology. So Rashi says, it's bothered Rashi. How do you know what you look like in the giant's eyes? Like, I don't know what I look like in your eyes. Does everybody sitting here? Some people, I may look like a rabbi, a businessman. I don't know what I look like in anyone's eyes. How could I know what I look like in your eyes? I know what I look like in your eyes. How do I know what I look like in your eyes? Because whatever I perceive myself to be, that's what I project to you. So if I perceive myself to be a rabbi and giving a class and I'm a rebbe, then that's what you're looking at me as a Rebbe. If I perceive myself to be a businessman that just happens to know a couple of words of Torah, then what you're going to think of me as a businessman that just happens to know a couple of words of Torah. What I perceive myself is what I project to others. So, the Pasuk tells us something very interesting. The Pasuk says, we thought in our eyes that we were grasshoppers. Therefore, they think we're grasshoppers. What they should have said is, they think we're grasshoppers. So if you think I'm a grasshopper, then I think I'm a grasshopper, which I want you to know, I argue with all the time with kids. They're like, I'm a nobody. I'm like, who told you you're a nobody? Why do you feel like you're nobody? Because my teacher tells me I'm a nobody, and my parents tell me I'm a nobody. And I'm like, wrong! That's not why you think you're a nobody. You think you're a nobody because you think you're a nobody. Because if you think you're a somebody, no teacher, no parent, nobody in the world can make you into a nobody. And if you think you're a nobody, and I get this all the time, what do you mean, my daughter, I tell her she's beautiful. I deal with anorexia, right? So that person has a perception that they're fat, but they're not fat. So the mother doesn't understand, but I'm telling her she's skinny, and I'm telling her she's beautiful. So, like, she knows she's beautiful, and I'm like, no, she doesn't. Because what I tell you will never make you think or perceive yourself any different. You have to tell you. So no matter how many times you tell someone you're beautiful, you're beautiful, you're beautiful, if that person doesn't think you're beautiful, you're wasting your time. And you can tell someone, you're ugly. You are so ugly. Chas v'shalom, no one's ugly. But if you would say that, and that person thinks they're beautiful, okay, that's your opinion. I'm beautiful. You just don't see my beautiful side. So a person's who they are, when a kid tells me that I don't think I'm anything because my mother said it, or my psychiatrist, not my therapist, but my teacher said it, I'm like, no. You think you're nothing because you think you're nothing. Nobody can tell you you're nothing. Only you can tell you you're nothing. Or that you're something. You can go around and tell someone you're the greatest thing that ever happened, and they have low self-esteem. No one understands that. How could she have low self-esteem? We are the best parents. We tell her she's great. She's unbelievable. She's the best student. She's beautiful. She's amazing. And she walks around depressed all day. And the answer is, because no matter how many times you're going to tell her that, she has to think she's amazing. And that is a lesson from Chumash 101. The Chumash tells us that first they said, we perceive ourselves as grasshoppers. Therefore, we know that the giants perceive us as grasshoppers. Because what I perceive myself is what I project. Now, there's a very funny Rashi here. Rashi says, because it bothers him, he says that, why did they think they were grasshoppers? It's one of the hardest Rashis to understand. So it says that they heard the giants talking to each other when they were in the grass, and the giant said to the other, Nimaylim, there are ants in the grass. Rashi, you just made it tougher. You're asking a question, how do they know what they were? You're answering it that they overheard the giants talking, there are ants in the grass. So if they heard the giants call them ants, why are they saying that they're grasshoppers? Rashi, you made it worse. So no, they called them. Rashi's saying they called them their ants. So they're ants. So they should have said, we're ants. They called us ants. The answer is no, they didn't think they were ants. So that's why the pasuk tells us, that's the answer. The pasuk tells us, we heard what they called us. We don't care what they called us. I'm not what you call me. I am what I perceive myself. So the pasuk's telling you, Rashi says that even though they heard their ants, they came back and said that they're grasshoppers. Why? Because that's what they perceive themselves. So I learned something amazing, mind-boggling from this. That means that you can come and tell me that you're no good. Right? You're an ant. But if I perceive myself as a grasshopper, then I'm a grasshopper, says the Torah. Your perception of who you are, that's who you are. No matter what anybody tells you. You're an ant. No, I'm not an ant. I'm a grasshopper. It's a little bigger than an ant. It's not much bigger than an ant. I'm a grasshopper. When they told Klal Yisrael, the Nesi'im, right, got up and said to the Jews, we feel in this whole situation, we're grasshoppers, all the Jews were finished. Because their perception, the Jewish perception and their attitude changed. And they said, if they're grasshoppers, what are we? We don't have a chance. The minute the perception of themselves changed, they were doomed to be in the desert for 40 years. So what changed here? A nation that left Mitzrayim and had Kriyas Yamsuf, who had a perception that they could do anything, they could destroy the greatest nation in the world, they're the toughest, they're the strongest, they're ready to go to Israel, show me giants, show me big buildings, I'm not scared of anything. These 10 Meraglim got up and said, no! You're not powerful, and you're not strong. You are a grasshopper. And the minute they changed the perception of the Jewish nation, the pasuk says, the whole nation began to cry. Done. Finish. The perception of the Jews changed. That's who they are. Attitude. It's your attitude that defines your perception, which defines who you are. That was the whole Parshas Shlach. So those of us who don't have the right attitude, we need to go into ourselves and we need to work on ourselves to believe in ourselves, to believe that God can do anything. The bigger the giant, the bigger the miracle, the bigger the connection to Hashem. Yiras Hashem, that word Yiras Hashem, it's been used in schools very wrong. You have to fear God. You have to fear Him. He's this thing that you have to be scared of. No. You know what Yiras Hashem, I heard, and I'm going to leave you with this thought. I heard this last night. I always thought Yiras Hashem means awe. Not fear. Hashem doesn't want you to fear. I'm in awe of God. A guy came over to me last night. Yeah, I get these people come over to me. They like to tell me Dvar Torah. He said, Rav Wallstein, I heard your share on Yiras Hashem, and you said it's awe. He said, it's much more than that. You know what he said Yiras Hashem is? He said, Yiras Hashem is a little kid when his mommy and his tati leave the house. And they're going on vacation. And he's so scared to stay with his brothers because mommy and tati are not there. Yiras Hashem is the fear that tati, Hashem, is not right next to you. That's Yiras Hashem. The fear that Hashem is not with you all the time. And that is a whole different meaning. So the person who has Yiras Hashem is like, Hashem, come on, don't leave me alone. I need you to walk with me to work. I need you to sit next to me at work. I need you to be in my house. I need you to be with my kids. I need you to take care of me. Tati, don't go on vacation. Don't leave me. That fear that a child has when his parents go away or they're going to a wedding. And you know, good night, Chaim. I'm leaving. Mommy, please don't leave. I have a wedding. I'm really sorry. But don't worry. They're going to take care of you. Mommy, please don't leave. And some kids don't sleep until their mommy and tati come home. So he said, that's the taina to us. Hashem, destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, he left the house. 2,000 years ago, he left the house. How come we don't miss him? How come we're not those children? Where's Tati? I don't want to be without Tati. That's Yiras Hashem. And if Klal Yisrael, of all of us, will have that feeling that we're missing Hashem and Tati left the house and we're here and we're scared, then Tati will come back to the house. And he'll build the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll get the right attitude and the right perception, and we'll realize that we're not the grasshoppers. The rest of the world is the grasshoppers, and we're the giants.